was released last week, and there has been no shortage of commentary about this movie, both good and bad. And let me tell you, the conservative Christians are fired up about this movie, many of whom have not even seen the movie, but are telling other people, don't go see this movie because it is morally corrupt and it'll mess with your values. So, of course, I had to go see this movie. Brian Godawa of the Christian Post says the movie is anti-human exceptionalism and that the director, Darren Aronofsky, has hijacked the biblical narrative and subverted it to preach his secular, humanistic, atheist, enviro worship. A lot of folks are talking about how the director is an atheist. And how on earth could an atheist write a movie that's based on the Bible? And why would you even want to go see a movie that was directed by an atheist? Or as Godawa calls him, a cheesy atheist preacher. Matt Walsh, a Christian blogger, calls the movie a steaming pile of heretical horse manure and a blatant mockery of the telling of the Judeo-Christian theology. Some conservatives, like Glenn Beck, are using spoiling techniques to publicize the plot to dissuade people from seeing the movie. Because who wants to see the movie if you've already been told the plot, right? I think we're familiar with the plot. Ken Ham, who you might know as the creationist who debated Bill Nye the Science Guy, has tons to say about this movie, including that it is disgusting and evil paganism. But it's not only the Christians that are skeptical about this movie. You might be surprised to hear that some people are not interested in seeing the movie because it is a Christian movie. Nobody here, right, would be not interested in seeing it. Some, like Thomas Paine in his 1794 treatise, The Age of Reason, dismiss the flood story and think perhaps that the story of Eve and the serpent and Noah and the ark drops to a level with Arabian Nights without the merit of being entertaining. But I disagree with Mr. Paine. The stories of many religious traditions, including the stories of the Bible, are powerful and provide us insight into the living of our lives. These tales reach into our deepest selves. They speak to the struggles of the human heart and how we live our lives in the tumultuous world. Film critic Justin Chang encourages his readers to see the film because it challenges rather than coddles. It generates questions rather than answers, and it forces us to grapple with the very idea of faith and exactly what it's good for. It truly illuminates an ancient story in order to explore its applicability to the present. I enjoyed the movie, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about why that is later in the sermon, but first, I wonder what your experience is with the Noah and the Ark story. Perhaps you had a similar experience as a child as I did, learning the story of Noah and the Ark. So I found this video online of a song that I was taught as a child about Noah's Ark. And some of you might be familiar with it, and I encourage you to sing along with it. Go back memory lane if you know the song. And if you don't, then you're in for a treat. It's silly, so have fun with it. Thank you. A beautiful story of rainbows and doves and animals. So I've been wondering what my own children think of this story. What do they know? Because they were raised Unitarian Universalist, obviously. And I wonder, did they learn anything about this story in RE, or do they know anything about it? So I seized the opportunity to talk with Casey, my 7-year-old, about this last week while he was floating a boat that he made of aluminum foil in the bathroom sink. There it is. So he insisted on making this boat 30 minutes before bedtime because he had the SAT test. All the kids had SAT tests this week in Hillsborough County, and he had it the next day, and he was convinced that they were going to ask him how to build a boat out of foil on the test, and he wanted to be prepared. So I humored him, and I sat down beside him, and I filled the sink with water, and I asked him, Casey, what do you know about the story of Noah and the ark? And so he answered, Noah built a really big boat. And he put two of each animal in it, a boy and a girl, you know, so they could have babies. The Noah story truly is many children's first sexuality education lesson. And then he tells me there was a flood because God was mad. He was mad at all those bad people, and he wanted to get rid of them. He saved the animals because the animals are good. And he saved the good people, but the bad people had to go. They were wrecking things. So that's what Casey knows. And so I talked to my 9-year-old, and the conversation was a little bit different. So I asked him, Desi, what do you know about Noah and the ark? And this is what he told me. Well, I know if I had been there, I would have secretly built another ark and filled it full of people. And when the storm was over and Noah got out of his boat, I'd get out of my boat and say, surprise, Noah, I saved all the people. He's a wonderful little UU boy. So the story really isn't a children's story, even though it is one of the most popular Bible stories that is told to children. And some kids really think about it more deeply than others. For example, one of my young family members who has not been raised with religion, her father is atheist, she wanted to learn more about religion, so he decided to take her to the Catholic Church. I know, I was like, come on, come to the Unitarian Universalist Church, you'll learn all about it. But no, she wanted to go to the Catholic Church, and she started reading the Bible. And now she wants to talk to me about the Bible all the time because I am the family theologian, which is fun. I always engage her. And she was studying the story of Noah a few weeks back for her confirmation class. And she wanted to talk about it. And as she summarized the story to me, I could see that she really felt the anger of God. And she really felt like she was a bad person and that she was going to be punished, like the people in the flood were punished. So my universalist spidey sense started tingling, and I leapt into action. Did y'all know I was a UU superhero? I'm ready to fight destructive theological teachings in a single bound. I assured her that there was another way of looking at the story. I said, let's think about it as a symbol for new beginnings. Even when we mess up, which we do, I'm just as guilty as you are. The poor girl thinks that I walk on water. You know, ministers and all that, how we're perfect. Not really. And even when things fall apart, which they will, we are given a chance at a new beginning, just like the flood. There are so many perspectives and controversies around the story of Genesis in this movie, and I wanted to talk about them all with you this morning, but I thought maybe you weren't interested in sitting for a 3-hour sermon. So I kind of narrowed it down a little bit. Some of the ideas that hit the cutting room floor include, is the movie true to Scripture? What does the movie say about humans, the human's role in the care of creation? What does science say about the flood mythology? And how is a woman's worth defined by her ability to have a child? And vice versa, a man's worth defined by his ability to sire a child? What does God's covenant with creation tell us about our covenant with each other? What is the nature of sin, temptation, evil, salvation? All powerful questions to explore. But why even bother? Why should we even look at the book of Genesis? J. David Plains, in his book, When the Great Abyss Opened, notes that some of us treat religious stories as literature of the spirit. We find these ancient traditions a rich heritage that continues to stir the mind and enliven the heart with transcendent tales of natural wonder, spiritual mystery, and humanistic truth. As Unitarian Universalists, we look at these stories, these vast sources of wisdom found in our universe, and we embrace the path that helps us make sense of it. We engage in the practice and the texts, the way of being taught through the lives of the men and the women who have walked the way ahead of us. And we honor our direct experience as a source. In the book Broken Open, How Difficult Times Help Us Grow, Elizabeth Lesser hits on this. She writes, "Our own life stories are myths in the making, stories as profound as the most oft-told tales, the Phoenix myth, Dante's Inferno, Homer's Odyssey, the Greek myth of Persephone, the Sumerian tale of Inanna. We can all find ourselves in the Old and the New Testaments of the Bible, in the parables of the Buddhist and the Hindu traditions, and in the shaman stories of the indigenous people from the Americas to Africa. We can reframe past events and experience our present life as if we too are gods and goddesses, heroes and heroines, warriors and wanderers. We are the meaning makers. As a child, I was told what the Bible said, and I was told what the Bible meant. I was not invited to wrestle with its meaning, to meditate on what the stories meant to me. As an adult, I have come to understand that the Bible is a living document that I can read and interpret and struggle with. What does the Genesis story mean to me?" In the movie, Noah's daughter-in-law asks him, "Is this the end of everything?" And Noah responds, "No. It is the beginning of everything. Every shift in our life comes courtesy of the friendly forces," writes Lesser. "Every catastrophe can hand us exactly what we need to awaken who we really are. It's difficult, though, when you're in the middle of a painful transition to mine the experience for personal growth. I have witnessed new life born from catastrophe. I have seen the darkness that results from betrayal and illness, the demise of a dream, the loss of a job, the death of a loved one. And all of these can function as initiations into deeper life. I have seen friends and family members rise from the ashes like a phoenix, reborn and resurrected. My closest friend went through a divorce a few years ago, and she experienced a great loss, not only of her husband, but of her in-laws and family members and some of her friends in her home. She lives just a few blocks up from me, and she had this really pretty bungalow, yellow house, and she had planted the garden in the yard, and they owned it together, so they had to sell it. With the divorce, they also lost their financial stability. She tells me that after the divorce, she wondered if she'd ever be able to connect with another person like that again. if she'd feel love in the same way again. She experienced feelings of guilt. How did this happen? It wasn't supposed to happen like this. And no one imagines that their marriage is only temporary. She spent time judging herself, wondering if there was something she could have done differently to salvage their broken relationship. And she felt judged by others, well-intentioned family members who encouraged her to stick it out, who would tell her that marriage isn't easy, which is true. It's not easy. And sometimes the brokenness can be fixed, but sometimes it cannot. Sometimes we must just experience the loss, hunker down, wait for the storm to pass, and emerge again transformed. And it hurts. It hurts to weather the storm. At times we may just want to retreat and not engage with the ways our lives are changing, the ways we are being broken open and transformed by our painful experiences. Are we willing to enter into a place of self-examination? Are we willing to take the journey that will help us unlock the call of our soul? Are we willing to let the flood come, to wipe away all that we knew before, to be confused, to be heartbroken, and to be courageous in the face of our fear? It has been a process of reemergence for my friend, a process of adjustment and relearning how to live in the world, a process of forgiveness and acceptance. But she found love again, and in just a few hours, actually, at 5 o'clock, she will be checking herself in the hospital because she's having a baby today. So we have a new baby in the family. It's very exciting. So last night I brought her pineapple juice and spicy Doritos because I had read that that would help encourage Angelina to come into the world, and we really want her to get here as soon as she can, but she's pretty stubborn. She was supposed to be here a week ago. So we sat on my friend's porch, and we talked about the amazing adventures that we have had together over the past 8 years of our friendship. And I think her divorce was like a flood. There really wasn't any salvaging or fixing to be done. It just needed to end. And the flood was painful and frightening and angry and violent, and there was yelling and despair and confusion and blame. And then it was over. The marriage was washed away, and she was forever changed. At the end of a dark night of the soul is the beginning of a new life. There is hope. This is what came to my mind as I watched the movie Noah. It is a very dark movie. It is a very dark story. It is not about cute animals and doves with olive branches and rainbows. It's about struggle and pain and loss and, yes, hope. I watched the movie alone on a Friday morning, 10 o'clock in the morning. There were not many people in the movie theater. And when the movie was over, I returned to my car and I sat in the driver's seat and I cried. And I wrote in my journal and I thought about the movie. I was just breathless from what I had just experienced. Breathless thinking about the darkness of the world and the darkness that has been in my life in the past. The pain that I have experienced and how again and again I walk through the shadows and am given another chance. How each time I was broken, I was given the opportunity to be transformed. Perhaps you too have walked through the shadows. Perhaps you too have been given another chance, have been transformed. Sometimes it takes everything to fall apart, everything to be wiped away before it can be built anew. Every story has an end, but in life, every end is a new beginning. We will experience great loss. our hearts will break, and the fires of daily life will push us to places we may not want to go. It is during these times of necessary soul work, that we need one another, and we need to get in touch with ourselves, to journal, to meditate, to pray, to listen to the pain and stay awake instead of shutting yourself down, to be silent. Let things be sorted out in the silence. Engage in physical exercise. Create art. This will bring your revelations deep into your body. Another way to bring the revelations out is through psychotherapy. I know that in our culture, there often is a stigma around psychotherapy, which is a shame, because therapy can be a very useful tool in transformation after the flood, after the destruction. Therapists help us heal ourselves, guide us to a new understanding of who we are, how we are, where we will go now. Therapists are guides who help us see that every story has an end, but in life, every end is a new beginning. I'll close with these words by Molly Fumia. Resurrection, the reversal of what was thought to be absolute, the turning of midnight into dawn, hatred into love, dying into living anew. If we look more closely into life, we will find that resurrection is more than hope. It is our experience. The return to life from death is something we feel on the surface of our tender skin. We have come back to life, not only when we start to shake off the shroud of sorrow that has bound us, but when we begin to believe in all that is still endlessly possible. We give thanks for all those times we have arisen from the depths or simply taken a tiny step towards something new. May we be empowered by extraordinary second chances. And as we enter the world anew, let us turn the tides of despair into endless waves of hope. Amen and blessed be.